All right, when we come back, I have somebody really interesting for you to talk to. Amanda Satelli is the managing partner of Satelli & Associates. She's the author of a new book. She is her strategy consulting firm helps companies understand what obstacles are out there that they are facing and how they can be agile, how they can move faster. I mean, maybe you're like me, but I feel like the world is just moving so fast right now that it's really hard to stay ahead of the game, let alone it's even hard to just keep up. So Amanda's come in, and she's going to talk to us all about what is the best advice that she gives to her clients about recognizing obstacles, how fast things are going, and how you stay ahead. Stay tuned for all this and more on the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. Just a reminder, we're going to have all of the information for all of our guests today up at the thinklink.com website. You can just go there, sign up for the free weekly newsletter, or you can follow us on Twitter at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. So I recently got introduced to Amanda Satelli. She's sitting right next to me at the studio. She's the managing partner of Satelli & Associates, and a friend of ours who's actually been on the show before, Steve Ely of eCredible, thought that Amanda and I would have a lot to talk about. And as it turns out, he was exactly right. And, in fact, I wanted to continue this conversation, so I invited her to be on the show today. She has been worked for some of the biggest consulting firms in the country. And what she specializes in is helping organizations and companies understand what obstacles they're facing in a changing marketplace and what they can do to actually move faster to either keep up with the change, get ahead of the curve, whatever it's going to be to make them super successful. Here in Atlanta, where she's lived for quite a while, she went to, after coming back from Harvard Business School, she has been the past president of the Harvard Business School Club of Atlanta, but she seems to be one of the most connected people around. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Elise. It's great to be here.
So she has a new book, and this has really intrigued me, and you should go and get this book. It's called The Agility Advantage. Agility Advantage. Why use the word agility?
It was a word that I began to use just as an experiment, and I found that people just really picked up their ears when they heard it, and they were like, that's what I've been missing, the agility. They saw that they were experiencing changes in their market that they didn't know what to do about, but all of that corporate sludge kept them from being able to move as quickly as they wanted to. So it's one of those things that everybody wants, and nobody's quite sure how to get it. And my goal was to figure out how to do that.
So being agile is something that I think people can relate to, particularly around technology, where it seems like there's all these technology solutions that make us more productive. You know, we just had a guest on, Christy Ross, talking about her Dough.com and tasty trading platforms where on your phone you can do options trading, which is another discussion for another week about whether that's a good idea. But the idea that you can actually harness this enormous power, I mean, if you think about how you used to have to trade options, you had to have an options broker. It was a very cumbersome, time-consuming sort of process, and they're packaging it to make you more agile in that marketplace. So the things that you do for clients, making them more agile, how do you help them identify those problems? And then what are some of the solutions that companies and individuals can use themselves?
Well, let me first talk about what some of the problems are. So companies are usually, there's three things you need to mainly do to be agile, and companies are often good at two of them but not good at the third, and it can be any of the three that they're bad at. The first one is to have your eyes and ears open, so see the change and be objective about the change, mm-hmm. to really realize that the change is happening. The second one is to deal creatively with, okay, I see these changes happening, some of them are scary, but how am I going to exploit the change? How am I going to do something differently than what my competitor does? Because if we all see the same changes and we all make the same choices, we just end up still competing with the same people on the
right.
same terms. And the third thing that companies need to be good at is to be able to execute in a really flexible way, because you don't just change once, right? You keep changing.
Oh, it's nonstop. Yes. I like to joke that I'm reinventing myself about every 18 months.
Oh, my gosh. Everybody has to be doing that these days.
Do you think that comes from that whole Intel chip thing where every 18 months, like, the computing power doubled and I forget what that's called.
Moore's Law.
Thank you. Anyway, carry on.
Yes, I do think it comes from that. But it also comes from just the incredible creativity of the human brain. We all want to be creative and we want to collaborate with each other. And people are just always thinking of new ideas. And it's much easier to do now than it used to be.
So interesting. So when you work with companies, where do they, how do you translate that to your own life? Because I think that people feel trapped. You know, we hear week in, week out, people on the show, they call in and they feel stuck. You know, being stuck is a big motif of this show. People get stuck in personal problems, in real estate problems, certainly in financial problems. They get stuck at their job. They get stuck at their companies. So being stuck is certainly, it's really hard to be agile if you feel like you're walking through Jell-O.
Right.
How do you take that first step? How do you self-identify, or what are some things, some tricks of the trade that you could share with us that would help people unstick themselves?
So I think what causes people to be stuck is that they keep getting better and better at the things that made them, you know, that have created their success to date. And that's what happens to companies too, right? They keep getting faster and faster, more and more low cost, and they keep on just getting more and more efficient without keeping their eyes and ears open and thinking about what could I do differently. So my belief is, and I've just become more and more adamant about this as I've studied it more, is that the only thing that's going to get you out of those ruts, those sticking places, is change. I mean, external change that's going on around you. And that if you can think of change as the thing that creates the opportunities for you, you keep your eyes open and you realize that it's something that you can exploit and capitalize and make work for you instead of being a scary thing.
So I love that, because one of the things that I do to coach myself into all these changes, because everybody's like, oh, you're such a change agent. But, you know, it's like scary for me, too.
Right.
Where, you know, I look out and I see, you know, journalism, which is where I started my career, collapsing to the point where there are the same number of journalists that there were back in 1950, you know, and here we are in 2014. So you have to coach yourself into new and different areas. And I like to say on the show that if you're really stuck, a step in any direction is a step in the right direction.
Right. So that's the key. You've hit it on the head, which is that you've got to take the first step and begin to experiment. So just a simple example, I went to my favorite sushi restaurant one night, and they were trying this thing which was you can make your own sushi. Well, that was really interesting. It's like, I didn't know how to make sushi, and so I'm sitting there trying to roll it up, and of course I do everything wrong, and ends up totally mangled. But that was an experiment. You know what? They only tried it for a couple of weeks. It didn't work out.
Because everybody else was like, your sushi looks better than mine. Right. I don't want to eat mine.
But at least they tried something. And right. I would recommend to people in their own individual lives, if they're feeling stuck, try something. Try an experiment that maybe is fairly low risk, but it gives you learning. And that's where you know what the next step to take is.
So when we were having coffee before the show, we were talking a little bit about some of the biggest obstacles or the biggest change things that your companies are seeing. And I was thinking to myself, you know, one of them is this idea of user-generated content and how that sort of affects companies. And we were talking about some examples of how that affects people in real lives as well. And small business owners who are listening to the show are going to feel that. So how do you take a situation like that where, you know, journalism's collapsed because of it, people do user-generated content, how do you take that and make that a win for you?
I think the biggest thing that you need to do is realize that it's an old adage, but, you know, a complaint is a gift in a way. And that if you can just have an interaction, a dialogue with your customers, that's always better than no information. And so creating platforms for your customers to interact with you, creating ways for customers to contribute just gives you such rich information that you can act on that maybe your competitor isn't paying attention. And so if you're paying attention, the more that you can get that dialogue going, the better off you're going to be, and you're going to be the one who's going to make the right decisions about what to try next.
So I also love the idea of spying on your competitors. So you can use Google to your advantage, right?
Oh, right.
Or Bing, if you're really a Bing person.
Mm-hmm.
You can use Google, and you can search out your competitors and what people are saying about them, because the complaints about your competitors mm-hmm. could provide an opportunity to do something better in your own shop or take on a new line of business, I would think.
Oh, definitely.
So we talk to our clients in the content marketing space. You know, we always say to them, well, let's take a look and see what your competitors are doing. And how does that inform, for a better or worse situation, what you should be doing? And you don't have to call them on the phone anymore. I mean, this is all can happen mm-hmm. digitally. It's, you know, one of the beauties of the Internet. What do you advise people as a first step? Is it this get more information? Is it identify the problems? How do you get people to actually outline their future?
Oh, well, that's a big question. But
I know we only have 2 minutes to the break. But
I wanted to say one thing on the competitor issue, which is it's remarkable how many companies do not even use the competitor's product. They almost have like an unwritten rule that every employee has to use only our product.
Ah.
And it's so dysfunctional, because you need your employees, you need your executives to try the competitor's product and try to love the competitor's product. See what there is to love about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really put yourself in that shoes of falling in love with the competitor and see what it feels like. And then do something completely different than what they're doing, because that's the key. If you just try to copy what everybody loves about the competitor, you're just going down a no-win road.
You know, it's so interesting. So when in my seller's book, 100 Questions Every Home Seller Should Ask, one of the things that I said is when you're thinking about your home and you're writing up the listing for it, you have to remember what made you fall in love with that house to begin with, right? So you're talking about really the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about what made you want to buy that house, right, thinking of the house as the product,
mm-hmm.
you'll be able to sell that product, the house, to somebody else. And you're really saying exactly the same thing, that if you can love what your competitor is doing,
mm-hmm.
you can imagine how you're going to bring those kinds of people, customers, to your own door, because it sort of opens it up. So I have this, we have to take a quick break, but I have this idea that we should just wrap up with, that you have to be able to step outside your company to give it some fresh eyes and be able to recognize the better and the worse of it to be able to move forward.
That objectivity is key, and increasing the porosity between your company and customers, suppliers, business partners, the world in general, is just absolutely essential to see what's going on around you that you can capitalize on.
So I'm talking with Amanda Satelli. Her book is called The Agility Advantage, How to Identify and Act on Opportunities in a Fast-Changing World. We'll put up the link at Amazon. She's going to come back in another minute. Stay tuned. I'm Elise Glink. This is The Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, starting with yours on WSB. Welcome back, everybody, to The Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, starting with yours on WSB. My guest in the studio is Amanda Satelli. She's the managing partner of Satelli & Associates, and her book, which you can order right now, especially all those people who are listening online and not driving. If you're driving, it'll be harder. The Agility Advantage, How to Identify and Act on Opportunities in a Fast-Changing World, is available right now for pre-order at Amazon.com. It actually gets published somewhere around October 1st. You can follow her on Twitter at A-S-E-T-I-L-I, A. Satelli.
Yes.
Amanda, when you look at people, you know, in companies, and you're working with the senior leadership, and they identify a problem, how do you get them to take the first step? What is the thing that you say to them that they have to actually do to embrace the problem?
Well, just defining the problem is actually a huge part of the process. The next thing that we usually do is just understand what on earth is going on out there. So what are customers saying? How is their behavior changing? What's happening with competition? How is competition changing? What's happening with regulations and things like that? But that sounds a little analytical. Really, I think the essence of it is to just say, what do we want to achieve together? You know, what would you love to be have accomplished 6 months from now?
Well, don't you say to them, you've got to love your problem?
I do.
Or you're never going to be able to solve it?
You have to love the problem. And by that, I mean the problem you're trying to solve for customers. It's
right.
It's what creates the juice that keeps everybody going every day. Because, you know, the biggest motivator for employees is not money and recognition and stuff like that. It's just making progress towards a meaningful goal. That's what I want to see every day is that, oh, I made some progress, right? So loving the problem is a good way to do that.
All right. You can find Amanda online at Setili.com, S-E-T-I-L-I.com, or you can follow her on Twitter, A-S-E-T-I-L-I.com. We'll put all that stuff up at ThinkLink.com. And we will also put the link to her book, The Agility Advantage, How to Identify and Act on Opportunities in a Fast-Changing World. You must read this, whether you have a big company, a small company, you're just on your own, you want to go get started in business, this is a place to start. Amanda, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. It was fun.